During the debate on the Joe Rogan Experience between archaeologist Flint Dibble and author Graham Hancock, Flint misled Graham, Joe, and the 5+ million people that have seen it so far numerous times. This is ironic, since Flint claims that he participated in the debate in order to challenge misinformation about history, to deliver real facts, and to feed the audience a truth sandwich. But the most brazen time that he did so has to be pretty much right in the beginning when he says this.
And I'd say we could definitively prove there was no large-scale metallurgy in the Ice Age. If you look at ice cores in the Arctic, right, we can track metallurgy of the Roman period, of medieval periods, based on lead emissions that end up in these ice cores. And there are no emissions from metallurgy in the Ice Age. So we can be sure that there's no global metallurgical civilization that's doing a lot of mining and smelting.
Notice the graph he used. Well, here's the paper it's attached to. It only goes back to 1100 BC, as does the graph. Neither the paper nor the graph have anything to do with Flint's claim about large-scale metallurgy in the Ice Age. They both address metallurgy in ancient Rome, a full 10,000 years after Graham Hancock's proposed lost civilization was said to have existed. Flint put the graph on the screen, made a false claim, and everyone assumed he was telling the truth, that he was properly representing the data. He may as well have shown a page from a comic book for all the relevance that that graph has to do with the conversation that he was having with Graham. But a comic book page doesn't look sciencey, and Flint needs this to look sciencey in order to pull the sleight of hand that he pulled there. That, and failing to mention that high levels of metals have been found in ice cores in the Ice Age, not only in Greenland, but also in Antarctica. Now, I've been researching this for a minute now, and I recently spoke to an ice core specialist who had a lot more information that I'm going to lay some of it on you here, and four more times that Flint misled his audience, and Graham, and Joe. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now, in order for them to obtain evidence in the ice for metallurgy, they not only need lead, they also need the specific isotopic signature from whatever area that the metallurgy or the mining was said to have occurred in. They typically see parts per quadrillion when working with these types of isotopes. For instance, mining in Australia is almost untraceable in the Antarctic ice. They have to look in the extreme limits of the spectrometer's capabilities to detect it. And when they're using such a tiny ratio, contamination becomes a problem. The blades used to cut the ice, they're made of metal. The metal that the ice is touching, even the stones stored nearby, can potentially contaminate the samples. The fluid used for the drill used to be almost pure kerosene. Now it varies based on depth and pressure of the surrounding area, but it's still heavily loaded with hydrocarbons and other contaminants. To further complicate matters, the little bubbles in the ice, this is what the scientists are looking for generally because it's unadulterated atmosphere from that far back. These also can weaken the ice, and a lot of times when they pull the cores up, the change in pressure will cause them to collapse, and a lot of times that will allow this fluid that I was just talking about to seep in there and contaminate big chunks of the core, if not the entire thing, especially when you're looking for specific chemicals like hydrocarbons and lead and things like that that tend to be in just about everything we do nowadays. Because of the complexity of this work, there's really only a handful of people alive today that are qualified to do it, and the scope of their work is extremely limited. But Flint doesn't portray that at all. Now, funding is always an issue with scientific research, and these ice cores, they're expensive to obtain, to store, and to test. But in addition to that, they don't really test for metallurgy in the Ice Age because they don't have a specific isotopic signature for a region in question. If somebody was to say, like, we think there was metallurgy that occurred in this area, well, then they could say, okay, the jet stream would deposit the stuff here, so we could look there potentially and maybe find evidence of it, and these are the isotopes we would have to find with the spike in lead. But instead, they can't do that. So there's no point. They don't and have not ever looked for the signs of metallurgy in the Ice Age. That's one thing I want to reiterate. Despite what Flint said, they do not and have not ever looked for signs of metallurgy in the Ice Age. Therefore, Flint's statement that we can say for certain no metallurgy occurred during the Ice Age is false. It's misinformation. The necessary work hasn't been done yet. Besides, though never tested for traces of metallurgy, we've seen that levels of atmospheric metals shot up several times during the Ice Age, a relevant fact that Flint failed to share with us. No, I cannot fault Flint for not knowing about ice core crumbling and contamination issues. I mean, he's no ice core specialist himself. But I have to call him to account for misrepresenting the 2018 paper in the graph that he showed to score a cheap debating point. Now, I got this information from Dr. Peter Neff, a.k.a. Icy Pete. He's one of the few ice core specialists on the planet that's got a social media presence where he reaches out and talks to people that aren't just scientists. I mean, he took the time to sit down and spend a full hour plus with me on Zoom, discussing all kinds of things with me and making sure that I fully understood this stuff and that my questions were answered. Which, of course, I really appreciate. If you haven't followed Dr. Peter Neff, you should absolutely go do that down on Twitter and on TikTok. He's pretty popular there as well, I hear. As a testament to Dr. Neff's impartiality, when I first reached out to him on Twitter regarding this matter, Flint Dibble jumped in on that thread and said, "Hey man, this guy's just a pseudoscientist trying to prove ancient high technology exists. You should be careful with what you say to him." And I told Dr. Neff, "Hey man, I don't believe in ancient high technology." And I didn't mention to him this fact, but Flint is well aware of that before me and him had a falling out. Me and Flint communicated quite a bit, and he knows that I frequently will debunk ancient high technology. But at any rate, Dr. Neff was chill enough to still communicate with me and make sure that I had solid data to go forward with this kind of stuff so that I wasn't misrepresenting the ice cores and all that stuff, unlike certain people with letters next to their names. Graham, Flint, and myself, we all believe that there was no metallurgy that occurred during the Ice Age, so what's the whole deal here? Well, the deal is that Flint presented his case dishonestly, and if this was a one-off, that wouldn't be that big of a deal, but as regular viewers know, this is far from a one-off. For example, when he talked about the 3 million shipwrecks on the UNESCO site.
We can think about shipwrecks, right? Graham has mentioned that the bulk of marine archaeology has focused on shipwrecks and not the continental shelves. And so the thing is, at this point, we have something like 3 million shipwrecks from around the world. And so one of my questions for Graham is, if this is a global civilization with ships, why is it that we don't have shipwrecks from this global civilization? I see this as a big, big problem.
Sounds impressive, doesn't it? But what Flint's not telling us is that the 3 million shipwrecks he speaks of actually don't exist. They're simply a UNESCO estimate, when in fact less than 180,000 shipwrecks thus far have been located, of which the vast majority are from modern times. Now, he claims we would find shipwrecks from the Ice Age if people used ships back then, but he does accept many islands were populated by boats millennia before the Ice Age. Even Neanderthals were said to have used boats. We have none of these in the record. Not a single vessel from before 9,000 years ago exists in the record, and that one, it was found preserved in a bog, not the sea. Now, he says that time isn't a factor for shipwreck preservation, but in fact, it is the number one consideration, according to underwater archaeologists. Flint believes that there were ancient boats. When archaeologists tell him there were ancient boats, even if they can't find a single one in the record. But if Graham Hancock says there were ancient boats, and he can't find one in the record, now it's a big, big problem. The standards seem to change based on who asks the question here. Another thing that Flint did that was just a little bit wrong was when he talked about crop domestication being something we know for a fact started 11,000 years ago.
Oh, the oldest seeds we have go back tens of thousands of years. The oldest domesticated crops we have go back about 11,000 years.
And where are those from?
From Syria, Turkey, the Fertile Crescent area, yeah.
Is it possible that there was domestication before that in other parts of the world?
I'm going to show you why that's not possible.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's kind of my goal there. Okay. Yeah.
And he uses wheat for his example, but rice is not nearly so cut and dry. The record for rice not only is so confusing that domesticated rice, weedy rice, and feral rice are frequently impossible to trace down genetically and isolate, but many feral rice species are thought to be previously domesticated and returned to the wild. Now, Flint says that this would take thousands of years.
But is it possible that this cycle of domesticating wheat and beans and all these different things has taken place many, many times? And that if you left them alone, they would go back to the wild form where if there was a disaster and people stopped growing them in this particular region, how long would it take for them to revert back to their original
thousands
state?
Of years again.
Thousands of years again.
And that's not true. It does not. If you're at ground zero for the feralization process, basically you can see it happen almost immediately. And this isn't something that academics really debate. I mean, feralization is poorly understood, and one of the reasons is it happens so damn quickly. Now, the number one sign for domestication is the inhibition of a trait known as seed shattering, which is a tendency for seeds to drop off of the plant as soon as they ripen. We want them to stay on the plant. And in rice, there are multiple genetic pathways that lead to the inhibition of seed shattering, which is something we would expect to see if it had been domesticated, returned to nature, and then domesticated again. Now, Flint should know for a fact that this case is not nearly as cut and dry as he portrayed it. This is his specialty, after all.
And then my second thing I'd like to focus on is food. I am an archaeologist who studies ancient food. I'm an environmental archaeologist. I've studied millions of animal bones from the past. I've helped collect thousands and thousands of seeds like these.
Another bit of untruth crept in when Flint tried to tell us that they used carbon dating for the pyramids and the other 4th dynasty edifices to date the Sphinx.
So I do want to be clear, how do we date the Sphinx? What kind of evidence archaeologically are we using? Mm-hmm. And so what that comes from is largely radiocarbon dates from the pyramids themselves.
But the carbon dating, it's not used to even date the pyramids. The carbon dating for the entire 4th dynasty is 200 to 300 years older than the mainstream historical timeline says that, you know, the written records from ancient Egypt. And the academics have leaned on those written records for so long, they still do today, the carbon dating has taken a firm back seat. This timeline of written records includes the reigns of the pharaohs, and often what construction records we have will reference the edifice and connect it to a pharaoh, and they will use that to date the Sphinx, not carbon dating. Now, this may seem minor. I mean, we're debating the difference between the Sphinx being 6,000 years old and 12,000 years old. What's 300 years? Well, it's not minor to me, and the reason is because Flint makes it look like they used hard data and context dating to date the Sphinx, but in reality, they used written records and context dating to date the Sphinx, which is far less robust than the carbon dating that they just kind of tend to ignore. Now, this last one is particularly insidious, in my opinion. When Graham pressed Flint and he's like, dude, why are you always seeing my ideas have some white supremacy pedigree when you know I'm not a white supremacist? Flint can sense that Joe's not into this crap either, and he starts kind of being like, well, you know, I waffle. I just was asking you to distance yourself from this, Graham. I'm not saying that you have anything to do with that stuff. I'm just asking you to distance yourself from it.
Archaeologist Flint Dibble says Hancock's claims reinforce white supremacist ideas, stripping indigenous people of their rich heritage, and instead giving credit to aliens or white people. Actually, I've never...
Did you really say that?
No, I said that this idea of Atlantis, the way it goes back 200 years, it has been used for those reasons.
So are you saying your quote is incorrect?
I think that it's editing me out of context, Graham. I've never called you a white supremacist or a racist.
No, I'm deeply unhappy that you have associated me with white supremacism, racism, misogyny,
I mean,
anti-Semitism,
if you didn't notice, it was always the same quote recycled. So I said something once, and then it gets recycled in like 15 different pieces.
I understand, but you said it.
And I did say it, and I said that there's this history of this idea which has been used by white supremacists, and that's an issue.
Right.
And I would like Graham to separate himself from that history in a stronger way.
Well, this is an outright lie. Flint knows for a fact what he's put into print, and out of all the stuff that he's wrote about Graham Hancock, including the article that he wrote right after the debate, he always talks about racism. He never once has said, man, I wish Graham would distance himself from those racists. Not once has he said anything like that. It's always, these ideas are rooted in white supremacy. These things spread all these horrible buzzwords. That's what it always is. And this was the worst to me of all of the falsehoods that Flint uttered during the debate. Not because it's the most damaging to the whole debate of Atlantis or whatever. I mean, this has really nothing to do with whether it's true or not. But it's the most troublesome to me because Flint, outside of the debate itself, he brings this up all the time, which has nothing to do with the science. And then when he's pressed on it in the debate, he denies doing it. He doesn't own his shitty behavior, and that's a big deal to me. That was really, really underhanded. I have covered many of these topics in greater detail, links below. And to my regular viewers, I apologize for rehashing some of these things, but I wanted to make a smaller package so that it was something that people that don't want to watch me babble for an hour could get. And I did have new info about the ice cores, and there's a little bit of other stuff in here that I haven't covered in the past. So hopefully that was good enough for you guys. But the deal here is that, you know, Flint, he misrepresented the limits of scientific knowledge of his field, and that's a big deal to begin with. But in addition to that, he's just sullying the good name of archaeology. I'm sorry. He can complain about Graham saying mean things about archaeologists all he wants, but by completely misrepresenting the data and lying about things openly, he's basically taking the lab coat and just running it through the sewer. I mean, watching the debate, and everybody's like, oh, Flint won, Flint won, Flint won. It's like, dude, okay, first of all, this is supposed to be an impartial thing, and he should be representing those limits, right? And he didn't. So he comes out and he says all of these things that Graham has no way to prepare for, right? I mean, he lies about things. He misrepresents them. If Graham wanted to win this debate, what he needed to do was, in hindsight, right off the bat, when that little thing came up for the metallurgy, little graph, he needed to point to that and be like, hey, man, we need to look at that for a second. Where's the paper? Hey, why doesn't this go back to the Ice Age when you said it did? But like everybody else watching, Graham thought that Flint wouldn't pull some cheesy, underhanded bullshit like that. But he did. Thanks a lot for watching. We'll see you next time.